We're back with Michael Bates at Broadband Horizons. We were just about to talk about how the local systems are backhauled to the big internet. Tell us how you do that.
Okay. Basically, when I was talking before about the design process, when we sit down with the utility company, we look at a layout of the grid, and in some cases, the utility has access to cable or fiber,
right.
And we will set up the system so that we can access the internet via that fiber or an additional build out of that fiber. So remembering that the concentrator units, which form the center of every cell, requires its own internet connection.
Right.
So in that case, it would be bringing cable to all of these different nodes and powering up from there. In other cases, so the case of Weimar, for instance, the pilot there, we used cable. Several of the other communities that we're talking to have access to cable, and so we're using it there. In other cases, like the case of Burnett, we fed the internet to the cells via a wireless connection. So off of the city water tower to the concentrator units that have an antenna, injects the internet signal then to the BPL cell, and then takes it on down the line using the BPL equipment.
So in fact, again, there's a lot of redundancy and flexibility in terms of how the signals are switched around.
That's exactly right.
Which, in fact, is a reflection of the basic architecture of the internet, which says, you know, find the best way to from one point to another and use it.
Right. That's exactly right. It also helps us that, you know, in some cases where, let's say, we're on the edge of the community and we're starting to get in the 1 meter per transformer area of service, and it's harder to make it work economically, we might, at the very edge of the BPL network, use wireless transmissions to get out into the more rural parts of the community.
And in fact, since your background is in wireless, you know how to do that.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We do. So that's our current business model. We think that's going to help us to get into communities that might not otherwise consider this type of technology.
Okay, now essentially we're talking about the BPL for the last mile here. What about national backhaul or real long distance, bringing the internet into the community itself through power lines? Is that technically feasible or economically feasible?
That's not
what you want to do.
Not feasible yet. They don't have high voltage equipment designed, and
right.
I don't know if that's coming or not. But it is a last mile solution. It's not it's not designed, and it's not.
Right.
Capable of doing
so, because there's been a lot of talk, both because people don't want the lines to crash and because of national security issues and so on, that there's going to be a big investment possibly in upgrading the whole national grid.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that could, upon which BPL might piggyback while that's being done to set the national grid up as essentially a backbone system for more internet transmission?
No, I don't know that. I mean, I think that from a monitoring it from a local level, certainly we'll be able to help with that.
Right.
And monitoring, you know, glitches from the local level back up, but from the high voltage side, I don't believe that we're ready for that yet.
Okay. But there's no need for that yet because there's plenty of other ways of getting signals from New York to Los Angeles and
right.
dropping them off in Houston.
Right. Well, one of the other interesting aspects of the technology, once you've deployed this, it does come in kind of a built-in outage notification system. So if you think about each piece of equipment being powered by the grid itself,
right.
if any of that, and this it's all monitored via web access software program, if any of those systems or pieces of equipment go out, you're sent an alarm. So the utility company gets the side benefit of knowing when and where a transformer would go out via this alarm system that's set up.
Okay, so
I don't know, the city of Manassas found that to be a good benefit.
Okay, so we've talked about the technical side, sort of the customer provisioning side. Let's talk a little about the regulatory picture.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any particularities about Texas that's made this easier or harder for you to do than it would be elsewhere?
Well, I would say that we're offering information services, and in this day's regulatory environments, information services are not regulated.
Right.
We're not offering telecommunication services, so I'd say in that case it has not been a hindrance.
So you're under the radar for everybody there, regulatorily speaking.
Yes, I would say we are until you get into the investor-owned utilities, which are regulated by in Texas the Public Utility. Utility Commission.
Right.
There are other issues that need to be resolved, I believe, before they will move forward with the technology, and it has to do with cross-subsidization and those kinds of things.
Are those issues under discussion by the relevant parties?
I believe they are. I believe they are here in the state of Texas. I can't give you any details because I'm in the loop there. But
right. Now, you said you were information services, not telecom services. I understand that over in Washington now, they're arguing about that for cable companies, mm-hmm. and whether they're information services or telecom services. Are you yourself or the communities or third parties in line to start offering voice over IP over BPL? And if so, is that going to change the nature of the system from an information service to a telecom service, and is that going to cause any regulatory and therefore commercial problems?
It might. It has the potential of doing that, but I can say that we are not offering that service, and our communities, our municipal utilities and other utilities that we work with are not going to be offering it as well.
Are private companies allowed to or encouraged to or prohibited from doing that?
That's a great question, and I don't have an answer for it.
So if Vonage wants to offer people voice over IP services through the internet, through this, there's no reason why they couldn't, is there?
I don't see that there would be a reason. They're doing it today.
Right.
And they're using, a customer's high-speed connection.
Right.
To set up digital phone service. So my answer would be I don't believe that there would be a restriction there.
Do you know if anyone is doing that yet, or any of your customers are using Vonage or other voice over IP services?
To my knowledge, nobody is using that for voice over internet.
Okay. All right. Now, there was just a big contretemps, and we covered it here pretty thoroughly, in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. because the city of Philadelphia is looking into putting a wireless municipal cloud over the city,
mm-hmm.
and Verizon didn't like that, and they went to Harrisburg, and they got a law passed that said municipalities can't offer broadband wireless services, although they signed a side deal with Philadelphia saying they'd waive their right to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
Where does broadband over power line in general and what you're doing in Texas in particular fit into this kind of situation if some of these big service providers, DSL and cable providers, say they're going to try to get laws passed to prohibit municipalities from offering broadband services at cost or charging people for them? Is that going to affect you? Would that shut you down if they did that in Texas?
The way I can answer that is just to give you the differences between
okay.
What I believe is happening in Philadelphia and what in other communities and what I believe BPL offers. Now, for the first primary difference is this is infrastructure that they have owned and controlled and made money off of for decades,
right.
in the electric grid. So we're merely converting that grid to a data network to the technology that we've already talked about.
So it's already in place physically, it's in place politically, it's in place commercially.
Yes, and they've been making money off of it for, like I said, for decades. In some cases, it's the primary source of revenue for these communities.
Right, they've been offering a service, they've been, right, okay, the primary source of revenue you're saying for the communities is the power they're offering.
Yeah, in many cases, that's the primary source of revenue.
Now, of course, clever lawyers can distinguish between offering electricity and offering telecommunications or information services, can't they?
If you use the argument that I believe is being made in Philadelphia, which is using taxpayer money,
right.
it's harder to do that because, again, this grid has been up and running for a long time. And if you could using that argument, I mean, the proposals and the business plans that we're offering are revenue neutral.
Right.
So there is no effect to the taxpayer.
Right.
So that's the only way, the best way for me to answer that is just to give you what I think the differences are between
okay.
the two. And I think that's the promise that broadband over power line offers.
Because I think the argument used to be, I'm not privy to a lot of it, but the argument has been made that it's illegitimate for communities to even offer electricity to their customers when the private investor-owned companies want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But presumably that argument's been fought and resolved in Texas already.
Yeah, well, there's three different flavors of electric providers here in the state. There's the investor-owned, the co-ops, and the municipal-owned.
Say a little more about the co-ops. What kind of structure is that?
Well, the co-ops are member-owned electric providers, and here in the state of Texas, there's several, and they're fairly large and cover a very large geographic area.
Right.
And have talked to some of those about broadband over power line. The real challenge, of course, is deploying it in that large of a service area where you've got lots of communities spread out across a large geographic area.
Right.
That's the real challenge for a co-op. But the other challenges are not there, so the issues about regulatory issues are not there.
Okay.
So co-ops will be our customers. Co-ops will get into the broadband over power line business themselves.
Because all the technical things we've talked about here continue to apply,
mm-hmm.
and as a co-op designed for mutual benefit, presumably, mm-hmm. this is just more mutual benefit.
Yes, and there's co-ops today offering broadband internet services to their constituents. In many cases, it's satellite broadband. Some of them offer dial-up internet.
Right.
So they've been doing this for a long time, and this is just another flavor.
All right. Now, I'm almost completely ignorant about travel patterns and employment patterns in Texas. Is this going to bring internet to some people who now have to travel long distances to get to work, and by having broadband connections can come to work less frequently and do more of their work at home using the broadband connectivity?
Yes, I would, and I think that's one of the biggest benefits. If you talk to a community on the economic development side, it's really, you know, retaining businesses so that people don't feel like they have to move to a metro area.
Right.
And then attracting new businesses that like the quality of life of rural communities, they can now come out there and have those types of services in place.
So, in fact, this is going to be a way to keep them down on the farm even after they've seen broadband.
Exactly. And it also helps, you know, if some of the students that graduate from high school in a lot of Texas communities, they stay home. There's a farm or a ranch or a family business to run. This broadband connectivity in these communities will give that student a chance to get a four-year degree,
right?
Having a broadband connection at home.
Are Texas institutions of higher learning getting on the bandwagon here and increasing their offerings on this basis?
That's a good question. I think that they see broadband connectivity is increasing in this state, and I know the major universities, Texas A&M for one, has distance learning programs.
Right.
So I would say yes, and I don't know. I wouldn't say it's directly tied to broadband over power line yet, because it just has the effect isn't there yet.
Right.
But I certainly do see the rise in broadband applications kind of driving the demand for the service. You build it and people are going to come use it. Really, it's the application side.
Now, and in fact, again, I'm revealing my almost total ignorance of a lot of things in Texas here, but this is going to go out to a lot of farms that will be able to do more high-tech farming and get more better weather information and order seeds more easily and do all kinds of things, won't it?
No question about it, or sell their products.
Sell their products and run, right. And in fact, some of these electric co-ops may be actually tied to production co-ops, and they can then piggyback their own economic activity on the basis of this technology.
You're exactly right. I think you're hitting on the real story, which is not just bringing broadband technologies out to smaller, medium-sized towns, but what they can use this technology for. And if they are empowered and they can kind of control their own destiny now that there is a technology that can use their existing asset,
right.
I think it makes it even more powerful than before.
So they'll be able to offer e-government services to themselves, collective farms. I assume they're a farm service, sorry, agriculture department that offers information to farmers on how to do a better job and so on.
Oh, yeah. We have one of the largest, Texas has a large extension agency that's, I don't know how many districts there are across the state, but and they have a very active role in helping farmers and ranchers with new technologies. And there's lots of different.
And in fact, like user groups, people who grow a particular kind of product or whatever, can get together in teleconference and talk about it and have online conferences about how to do a better job if they want to do it
right there and at the farm.
Right there at the farm, exactly. Okay.
Exactly right.
Say a little bit about the distribution of this signal on the farm or in the house once it gets there, and just a little bit about what I think is called home plug.
Yeah, so home plug basically converts your home into a BPL network. So you bring the internet connection to the home, however you bring it in.
Right.
Then you can convert the home and network all the outlets in the home with that technology.
Where it then works the same way. You put the plug into the socket in the wall, and then you have the and then you plug the connection either into a device or presumably a kind of airport wireless LAN device as well, right?
It's very similar to that. It's very similar.
So, and in fact, what you're doing is BPL is the last mile is to what HomePlug does within the home or the business.
That's exactly right. Now, you can do that if you've got a BPL network. You can use the HomePlug device to network the home the same way.
Right.
Or, I mean, that's, you know, so your analogy to wireless home networking, it's basically the same concept.
So, and again, you have the same flexibility within the home. You can either provide a wireless network or you can have a home plug network and distribute the signal throughout the building through the electric wiring.
That's exactly right. But with a BPL network, that is already in place.
Right.
So you can take this modem, if you've got it at home, you can unplug it and take it to work with you, plug it in at work, and you have the same subscription, so it recognizes that modem that you,
I see, okay,
that you have. It doesn't necessarily recognize the location you're at.
Right.
So you can basically plug in your modem any place in town in the service area and get internet service.
So you go to the drive-in or the Dairy Queen or whatever, and plug it in there, and keep working while you're ordering your burgers, and
exactly right,
and be billed appropriately without too much complication.
That's exactly right. So I mean, it's great for students. You know,
right.
Students can have this if they're, you know, they go from school to study hall to the library to home to do projects. Every place they go, they can plug in and get service.
And these devices, you put them in your backpack and carry them around, I guess.
Yeah, they're very small. They're about the size of about a half a shoebox, and they're thin devices, so they're very portable.
Okay, well, this sounds pretty exciting. What are Broadband Horizons' plans to take advantage of this? How much rollout are you planning on doing?
Well, we're already certainly in Texas. We've got a couple of dozen communities that we're working with right now in the design process. We're also working with the state of Kentucky. They're trying to broaden their internet capabilities, and we're working with municipal utilities there and a co-op. We're talking to some communities in the state of Oklahoma. And I guess my answer to that would be we're going to roll it out to as many communities as we can under smart growth.
Okay.
We're not going to try to exceed our capabilities.
How does this relate to smart growth?
In what regard?
Well, is this kind of a model that would allow for more appropriate city planning or rural planning so that there are new options available now in terms of transportation planning and residential planning and all the kind of distribution of functions within a community?
I think on the electric side, there's a lot of smart growth potential here. But as far as long-term planning, I haven't really thought much about that,
okay,
and I haven't seen it used that way.
Right, all right.
I was talking more in our own internal growth.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay,
growing and making sure that we're not going beyond our supply line.
Right. Okay. Is Broadband Horizons a privately owned company, publicly traded, or what's the story on that?
We're a privately held company.
You plan on staying that way, or?
I'm not saying that we didn't like growing our company to divest. I don't have a good answer for that.
Okay.
We're going to grow and we're going to be a solid company and just kind of see what happens down the road.
Okay. Down the road, this has the potential, it seems to me, to in some ways fundamentally transform rural life, doesn't it?
I think it also has the long-term potential to transform urban life.
How so?
As everyone knows, I think that the trend is to move from rural areas to metro areas because there's a feeling that, you know, if you're going to make a living, this is where you need to be. If you're going to get the types of services that you want, this is where you have to be.
Right.
So what I would love to see happen is that we kind of somehow, maybe in my lifetime, hopefully, beginning to kind of slowly reverse that trend so that a citizen that lives in a rural community gets the same access to services that you would normally get and feel like you only get in a metro area.
Which would mean people in metro areas who are paying exorbitant rents and doing exorbitant commutes and everything is crowded and so on, they've got more than enough urban life, might want to move out to smaller places, keep their job by telecommuting, and and walk out into a clear sky and a lot of space when they get up in the morning.
Exactly. Exactly. That would be my hope. I mean, that all the services that make you feel like you have to live in a metro area are now offered in the smaller communities, and that's not an issue any longer. You choose to live where you want to live, and the quality of life is virtually the same. And we're talking about access to education, access to health care, health prevention, all of it being fairly equal because of these technologies.
Okay. Well, let's watch that. Let's watch for that and see what happens.
Yeah, I certainly, like I said, I would love to see it happen. It's going to take a long time, but we'll see.
Okay. Thanks very much for talking to us. I think we've sped that process up a little bit. More people hear this, they'll want to do it.
I appreciate your time.
I appreciate your information. Do you have a? We're gonna link to it on the site, but maybe you could just say it anyway. What's the URL for your company so people who want to just follow up right away now and find out more can go there?
We're located at broadbandhorizons.com.
Okay, that's straightforward enough.
Yep.
Thanks very much, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in a few months and see how things are going.
Yeah, feel free to contact me anytime.
All right, we will. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.